Welcome to Headlines. This is Ari Wasserman sitting in for David Lichtenstein. Today we have a fascinating topic, a very relevant topic, birthdays. To celebrate or not to celebrate, that is the question. So we'll be talking about birthdays in general, and in particular, the greatest symbol of the birthday, the birthday cake. We will be discussing the birthday cake from four different vantage points. Number one, the cake itself. Is there a problem of chukas hagoyim, having a cake at a birthday? Is that going in the pagan ways? And number two, candles. That is the minhag ha'olam, to have candles on a birthday cake. Again, is that problematic? Number three, blowing out the candles. And number four, in some places, people make a wish. The birthday boy, birthday girl make a wish as if their tefillah will be answered the coming year. So is that, again, a problem of chukas hagoyim? We are going to have three fantastic guests on this show. We are going to start out with the illustrious Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Aaron Lopiansky. Rav Lopiansky is joining us not only to talk about birthdays in particular, but also to give us an important message that relates to birthdays that indeed should be incorporated into our lives, especially coming up to Yamim Noraim. And also, I and he had an ulterior motive that a good friend of ours, a common good friend of both of ours, has a birthday coming up this week, and we will be discussing him shortly. So that is going to be Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky, and then we will be joined by two Rabbanim to discuss birthday cakes, chukas hagoyim. First, it will be Rabbi Avi Wiesenfeld, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Beis David, the Posek. He is always interesting to listen to. And the first time on Headlines, a good friend for many decades, Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Ron. He is a popular lecturer in Yushalayim, a Magid Shir, at a number of yeshivas, and he also is very versed in esoteric historical information, including our very topic. Now, just to add on, after the original show started airing, we got some pretty immediate feedback from a couple of listeners saying that we had missed out on the view of Chabad when it comes to birthdays, and that is accurate. My fault, I apologize for that. So we quickly reached out to two of the real buckies in the policies and learnings and teachings of Chabad, and we are, Baruch Hashem, joined as well by them. They were incredibly kind to agree to be interviewed on unbelievably short notice. So Rabbi Simon Jacobson, the author of Toward a Meaningful Life, he's the founder of the Meaningful Life Center. He was the chozer of the Rebbe for many, many years, so he is joining us on very short notice. And also Rabbi Manas Friedman, the famed Chabad Shaliach international lecturer. We caught up with him while he was about to get on a flight in Newark. So very short notice, he agreed, sitting in Newark. I apologize for the sound quality. My fault, because we just reached out to him last minute after the show started airing, and he was really kind enough to be interviewed while waiting for that flight. A lot of overhead announcements as he was waiting. And just to mention, he is about to put out a new book, very related to our topic, Creating a Life That Matters. Before we speak with our guests, we're going to have a quick Dvar Torah from Parshas Re'eh. The Dvar Torah will be from Parshas Re'eh. The riddle will be from Parshas Akev, so we'll be able to get both of those Parshas because people listen both weeks. So when it comes to Parshas Re'eh, we're going to talk at the very beginning of the Parsha, a very powerful Pasuk, Re'eh, Anochi, Nosen Lifnechem, Hayom Bracha Ve'Klala. Look, I am putting before you today blessing and curse. There are various explanations of this pasuk. I just want to focus on one, maybe two words. So Rav Moshe Sternbach and his Tam Vadasa, absolutely beautiful set of Sfarim, he focuses on the first word, Re'eh. Why is this word in single tense, not in plural tense? And he says as follows, based on the Gra, that a person has to look at himself as an individual in the following sense, that he has to look at not what others are accomplishing, especially those who accomplish less than he does, but he or she has to look at what his goals, skills, responsibilities, obligations are independent of others. Because if we're looking at others who have accomplished less, we ourselves will accomplish less. So that is why it's spoken, Re'eh, in single tense. A message to each of us, look at yourself and make sure you're fulfilling what is incumbent upon you. They make sure you are reaching your own shleimus. Umar b'shleimus, your own. We have to each achieve our own potential, but not look at others. Because if we look at others who have accomplished less, that's only going to take out from us in pushing towards fulfilling our own potential. So that is what Rav Moshe Sternbach explains in his Tanya Das, and then he takes it another step. And he says, but if you look in this pasuk, it says Hayom. Re'ei Anochi Nosen Lifneichem Hayom. Why does it say Hayom today? And he says, because the point is somebody's responsibilities, somebody's obligations today are not the same as yesterday. And even if yesterday you accomplished a lot, that doesn't mean you can't accomplish a lot today, but rather each and every day has to be analyzed separately. What do I need to do? What are my goals today, regardless of my having accomplished a lot yesterday? And in fact, the same thing applies to birthdays. Birthdays, of course, it's a day to celebrate, but it's also a day of cheshbon nefesh. It's also a day of introspection, of analysis, and setting goals for the upcoming year. Of course, we should look at the past year and see what we accomplished, but the fact that we accomplished a lot last year is not a bar to accomplishing even more in the coming year. And in fact, we'll talk about not only birthdays in general, but we'll talk about specific years, specific birthdays. For example, 70 years old, that is a special time to celebrate. So that is going to be our discussion point to talk about Rabbi Lopoyansky's good friend and my good friend, Jonathan Rosenblum. Jonathan Rosenblum should be known by most of the world. He's been inspiring us for many, many decades through his weekly columns for Mishpacha Magazine and Yated. And Headlines indeed wanted to say happy birthday to Jonathan, David Lichtenstein, and the entire staff. Happy birthday to Jonathan. Celebrating this very week, his 70th birthday. He's actually this past year put out two biographies, one on Rabbi Meir Schuster and one of Rabbi Noach Weinberg. So Jonathan, we're hoping you will outdo it this coming year with three biographies, three Sfarim, and we indeed look forward to continuing to be inspired by your writings, by your guidance, through your clear thinking in the difficult, turbulent times where that is something that is very uncommon. So just on that point of the 70th birthday, the Nitei Gavriel, he has a beautiful volume on birthdays, and he says that 70 is a special day. And when it comes to the 70, you hit 70 years old, this is a time to misora tshuva. He bases it on a Meiri, and you should put all of your efforts into your Avodas Hashem. Jonathan, you've been doing that for many, many years now, so no change necessary. Always changes are good, but certainly that's something that you have focused on for many decades. He continues to say that even those who don't typically celebrate their birthday, 70 is worthwhile to celebrate. People who have a party, they invite Talmidei Chachamim. That is a Sudas Mitzvah, especially if you have Divrei Torah. And in fact, he points out there are some people who are nohag to say the bracha of Shehecheyanu when they hit 70. So we look forward to discussing all of that a little bit later on the show. Just before we go to our guests, we are going to go through the riddle of the week. This week's riddle comes from Parshas Ekev, and it says in the Pasuk, we're in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Tesvav, Heisir Hashem Imcha Kol Choli V'Chulman V'Mitzrayim, etc. Kodesh Baruch Hu will remove from you all the illnesses and difficulties that he had in Mitzrayim. It says as follows in the Pasuk, Lo Yisimam Bach, HaKodesh Baruch Hu will not place it upon you, but rather, Unisanam B'Chol Sonecha, he will place it upon your enemies. And what's interesting in this Pasuk is it says twice, to place, HaKodesh Baruch Hu won't place it on us, it will place it on our enemies. But in the Hebrew, it is different language. It says, Lo yisimam bach, he will not sima, he will not place it on you, but rather, unisanam b'chol sonecha, he will place it on your enemies. And the question is, when it comes to not placing it on Klal Yisrael, why does it use the language yisimam? And when it comes to placing it on the non-Jews, our enemies, those who are our enemies, it says, unisanam, a different language. Why yisimam, unisanam? Why is there a change there?
To leave a message, call 732-806-8700 and press number 2, or email at info@headlinesbook.com.
Now let's go to our guests.
Joining us now is Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky. Rabbi Lopiansky is the renowned Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva of Greater Washington, Tiferes Gedalia. He is a well-known speaker worldwide. He's actually speaking to us from France right now, where he's lecturing for a few days, and he has written numerous Sfarim as well. Rabbi Lopiansky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ari. It's good to be tighter to stroll, even if it's just through the recording. But it's very nice to be with you and keep doing your wonderful work. This forum you put out constantly on such a wide range of topics.
So thank you very much, Rabbi Lopiansky. So our topic today is birthdays. And the fundamental question is, to celebrate or not to celebrate. I guess we can put it into Shakespeare terms, to celebrate or not to celebrate. That is the question. So is this a day to celebrate, or is it a day even as an extreme to mourn that another year has passed us by? So how should we think about it, and how should we celebrate or not celebrate it?
So I guess the first point I'd like to make is a lot of times we deal with ideas, concepts that are from somewhere else, and we sort of try to ask ourselves, does it have Jewish value or not? In other words, we're not asking ourselves the question in a vacuum. We grew up with birthday parties and everybody going out for birthday parties and so on. And now we're asking ourselves, should we do it as from Jews, you know, that type of thing. So I'm always weary about that. Geirus is a difficult process, and taking a cultural trapping of non-Jews and being megayirit, I'm a bit weary. But having said that, there are different mekoros. You yourself have in Hegyon HaParasha brought down an amazing assortment of mekoros. So I would like to sort of separate it into two areas. Sadness, mourning, I think, is never positive. But two other sentiments might be appropriately expressed in the context of a birthday. One is gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that a person, especially when we reach a milestone of 50, 60, 70, etc., those are written about. Different gedolim have made different parties, simcha shel mitzvahs, a gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one. Two, I would say reflection and cheshbon hanefesh, to get a sense of what have you done in this time, what do you have left to do. And we all believe we come to this world with a certain amount of a lot of time, and how much good use of time have we made and how much not. So I'm a bit weary of saying the word mourning, even though, again, there are stories, except sofa and so on, where someone came in and saw him in deep tsar and tshuva. But that's unusual. That's exceptional. It's a big person, and each big person is a world on his own. But I think for us to think of the time that has passed away and what we've accomplished and how we might make better use of the time that's coming ahead of us.
Very good. So celebrate, but make it a positive forward, backward-looking and forward-looking event, right, as well.
And it has to be honestly so. In other words, if you go to your local deli and you have the thing playing the insane happy birthday and everybody extinguishing candles, it's hard to say, I'd rather keep it as a secular birthday party because that's honest. To take that and to make it as a time of reflection when it's anything but that, you learn to fool yourself. But if a person has a special landmark, a person's had a tough tkufa, and a milestone has come his way, or vice versa, if it's sincere, if it's genuine, then there's enough in different sfarim to certainly make it an appropriate event. I would like to add another story about an incredible birthday that inspired me. It is the Piasatsna's birthday. The Piasatsna's 40th birthday was celebrated before the war. And of course, he was killed in the war, Kiddush Hashem, and left over his incredible works. And they found his personal notes on his 40th birthday. And he says, I've become 40 years old. Do I think that I could have done more? I could learn more? I honestly don't think that I'm wasting any time whatsoever. And I really do feel all my time is being used appropriately. Do I think that there are things I could stop doing, you know, things that are wrong, whatever? So as much as it's humanly possible, I think that that I'm refraining from doing anything wrong. But what am I missing? He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, everything. I need to become a Jew. I need Geirus. I need Neshama. I need every cell in my body to be filled with being a Yid and with you. And it's an extraordinarily powerful, powerful personal. He didn't speak this for an audience. This is between himself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no false modesty. He's not saying he didn't do this. He's done Averis. He has all his time. He's very strong about it. And he puts his finger on what he feels is needed. I would advise you, it's in the back of the Chovos HaTalmidim. I don't remember offhand now which piece it is, but I'm sure it doesn't take much to look it up, to find it. It's somewhere where they have a collection of different things they wrote. And it is one of the most powerful, moving pieces ever. And it's an understanding of what Hasidus tried to add and who he was. The understanding that you can do everything right, but Yiddishkeit is about being everything. And the quality of a person is measured by how much neshama he has in everything, and not simply by the actions and the things that he goes through, the road that he goes through. So I think that if anyone looking to see what the birthday party of a very, very dehybana person, a person who is a very spiritual, deep person, looked like, that's it. And looking at the effect that his sperm have left for generations, I think somewhere that gift was given to him.
Rabbi Lopiansky, would you say that was the core concept in your recent Mishpacha article on what we're missing in the chinuch nowadays?
I would say an emphatic yes. And it doesn't have to be chassidus, it doesn't have to be musa, but it has to be something. Somebody has to feel that much more than specific actions are what is Yiddishkeit is. So I would say definitely so.
U'bilvad she'achaven livol ha'shamayim.
Yes. And this famous Kotzkevert, it says, echer amar ve'echer hamamit, whether you do a lot or a little, u'bilvad she'achaven livol ha'shamayim, the main thing is to be mechaven libol ha'shamayim. So everyone understands it, and that's certainly the simple pshat, that it's referring to the person who's mamit. Even if you weren't able to say much slichas, but if you mechaven libol ha'shamayim, that's good. The Kotzke said, no, this halacha is geared for the one who's being marbe, the one who does a lot and says a lot and thinks himself accomplished because of that. He has to bear in mind, that's what the Kotzke said, and that's who he was, and that's immemorial. That's the essence of that type of chassidus.
I think you just taught me pshat in that Gemara and Shabbos, the six questions that were asked when we go up on Ne'ev Asrin. And it says we always focus on the first part of that Gemara that says it's that we're asked about Nasata Ventata Vimuna, Kavati Torah, Sakta Periveria. But then afterwards it says, even if you say yes to all of those six, if you're a Yirei Shemaim in Ilah La, that's based on the Marbet.
Right.
Even if you can answer yes to all six of these, but if you're not a Yirei Shemaim, what are you accomplishing?
Okay. Yes, I agree fully. Good point.
Uh-huh. So aside for bar and bas mitzvah, there are certain years that are more special than others when it comes to birthdays. So right. If you walk us through some of the more significant years.
So the Gemara speaks at the age of 60 as Rabbi Yosef having passed Kares. 50 seem to be also mentioned. I guess people feel they're moving towards the older years. 70, my assumption is, it says shivim shana. That's something which is very, very meaningful. It's sort of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us a full complement of life, and anything afterwards is like Leia said, hapam odes Hashem. Understand that what I'm getting now is much more. I think we also could reflect bizman hazeh. When I was growing up, people who were 70 were old people. Their physical abilities were quite limited. It's what we would look today at somebody who's 80. And Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu has granted us the knowledge, understanding how to be physically more fit. And, you know, medicine has made tremendous strides. It's certainly a bracha to Kadosh Baruch Hu that we have, healthy years coming ahead.
Right. So Rabbi Lopiansky, this is a topic that I typically wouldn't ask you to come onto headlines for. There are much, I think, more significant, universal topics that have more fundamental relevance and significance to Klal Yisrael. But I had an ulterior motive for this one, because a common friend of ours, Jonathan Rosenblum, is celebrating his 70th birthday this week. So that was my ulterior motive. And that's, Baruch Hashem, you agreed to come on to headlines. And I'd like to ask you, what's the message that you have to Jonathan now that we too are celebrating his birthday? He doesn't know about this, but hopefully he'll join in the celebration. When everyone who hears this show, please reach out to Jonathan and say happy birthday to him. If you have his, I'm not going to give out his phone number, his cell phone, his email, but you can find it online. At least his email him, tell him happy birthday, and tell him you heard Rabbi Lopiansky telling him happy birthday on the show. So Rabbi Lopiansky, what would you like to say to Jonathan?
He is somebody that I hold in a special esteem. And you know what? I would like to make a point about Bez Hashem's 70th birthday, the number 70, having special significance for my dear friend Jonathan. It says in the beginning of Devarim, it says HaKadosh Moshe Rabbeinu started explaining Hoyol Be'er HaTorah Hazois. So the Chazal say Be'ayin Lashon in 70 languages. Now, we don't need to have an art scroll 2,000 years ago in every language. Why don't you just wait for the need to arise and have a translator? And the answer is translations are very tricky. In other words, to be able to translate something means it's true to the original meaning and it rings to the person who's listening or reading. It's a tremendously difficult task to translate Torah values into contemporary language. It's not English. Today, a Google Translate will give you an amusing but possibly grammatically correct translation of anything you want to say. Many people who are Torah true Jews translate it to English, but it's not a translation that rings in English to ears that are used to English as a culture, and not just as a technical language. On the other hand, there are people who write beautifully and movingly in English, but their connection with Torah value is either tenuous or it leaves a feeling that it's not quite right. Baruch Hashem, Jonathan has a unique gift where the Torah true values that he proclaims from his writings are that, and yet the language is the language of English. It's a language that sits well with people that are sophisticated, that are not in the Torah culture. Someone who's in the Beis Medrash doesn't need the column, because the column is contrasting. It's transferring values from one world to another world. But many people, and including many people who are Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and even people who've learned in yeshiva and kollel, are part of two worlds. And the way he's able to give it is an extraordinary gift. It's hopeful that it sets a standard on both ends of it, being Torah true and being something that rings natural and normal to the ear, something that really, really is very, very important. And therefore, my bracha is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should keep giving us HaTashmaya, and he should keep putting his efforts into producing the type of material, and hopefully the ultimate compliment of many, many people imitating him and imitating him well will be Neskayim as well in Mitzvah Hashem. So Bez Hashem, Ad Me'ev Esrim, continue to Hatzlocha and in being Marbitz, the beer of Torah in other languages.
I'd love to reserve you for in 10 years from now for the 80th birthday.
In Mitzvah Hashem, David, if you're willing, we should all be in Shalayim together way before that in Mitzvah Hashem.
Well, two of us are here already, so we're just waiting for you. Rabbi Lopiansky, thank you so much for joining us. It's always terrific to have you on the show.
And it's wonderful to do this for Rabbi Anderson. He really deserves something like this.
Joining us now is Rabbi Avi Wiesenfeld. Rabbi Wiesenfeld is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Beis David. He is a popular speaker, the author of a number of halachic works, and he's also the Rav and Posek of Kav Halacha Beis Hora'ah. Rabbi Wiesenfeld, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Rabbi Wiesenfeld, I have a serious halachic shaila, because I think it's about three birthdays of children coming up over the next few weeks. We just passed one, another three coming up. This is the season, and wanted to ask your psak, should we be celebrating or should we not be celebrating birthdays?
Okay, so it's a wonderful, wonderful question. And it's an important one as well, because birthdays at the end of the day to many people are very, very important, especially children. Children sometimes take these things very, very seriously. And it's something that's important to talk about. So I guess with anything, we could always go back to the Torah, which is the right way, the proper way of looking at everything. And that is, we find many places in the Torah and in Chazal of birthdays. One of the most famous ones that everybody knows is the birthday of Paroi. Medrash Rabbah brings it in Bereishis. Vayi b'yom ha-shlishi, referring to the birthday of Paroi. In fact, I'm personally a chosid of the Sadiger Rebbe, and Ramotcha Shalom Yosef of Sadiger was quoted to say that if the Torah is giving us the story of Paro's birthday, then obviously there is a message. And obviously it's something that's meant to teach us something. What exactly that is, I guess we'll get into. The other place that we find such a thing is actually in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Ches, when the Gemara tells us specifically when Moshe Rabbeinu died and when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, which was obviously on the same day, Zayin Adar, the Rosh over there in the Gemara in Kiddushin brings down, and his Lashon is like this, very interesting, that it's Yom Mishta V'Simcha, which is an incredible thing. It sounds like a birthday is something that is very, very, something to be celebrated, something to enjoy, something to mark. And the truth is, we can also go to some of the practices and minhagim and halachas that we keep during the year, and that is the Brocha Shechiyonu. Well, we say many times throughout the year, Yomim Tovim, sometimes when we buy brand new special things, we say the Brocha of Shechiyonu. And we say Shechiyonu V'kimonu V'giyonu Lazman Hazeh, that we have reached this stage. So there's no reason why we can't say the same thing about another year. Another year of life has passed. Here we are, Baruch Hashem, the Rabbeinu Shalom Hashem has granted us another year of life. We've reached this stage, Lazman Hazeh. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I don't see any reason why we can't celebrate it. And we find, again, like I said, places in the Torah and Chazal where they mention these ideas of actually talking about a birthday. Now, I'll go on and continue a little bit just to mention there's a Gemara in Erev in Daf Yud Gimel where the Gemara says, Nimnu v'gomer, they voted. A famous Mishnah, Noach lo la'odom shelo nivra, Yosem mishenivra. In other words, it's better for a person not to have been created rather than be created. Achshav shenivra, now that he actually was created, he should go through his deeds, he should look and see where he's holding. So it does sound from there that true, it would have been maybe better not to have been created. But now that we are and we were born, and this is a year later and another year later, so let's use it as an opportunity, as an introspection to see in our lives where we are holding and what we're doing. In fact, the Yerushalmi,
on that Gemara, it would seem that the personality of a birthday would be much much more introspective and serious than a more day of Yom Simcha V'Mishta.
Well, it could be taken that way, but it can also be taken the other way as well. It's true. It could be taken that go through your Maisiv, see where you're holding, see what you're doing. And there's a couple of stories of that maybe we'll mention later. But it could also be taken that, you know, Baruch Hashem, look how much I've accomplished. Look how much I've gone. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, you know, a fool looks to the right to see how much more, but a chacham looks to the left to see, wow, look what I've done. So maybe you could take the Gemara to be saying that, look what you've done. Of course, you need to be doing better and you need to be trying to see what direction you're going in, but look what you've accomplished in the time that you've been alive.
Right, right. I hear. I mean, maybe we split the day in half or something like that. So if we look to the poskim, have the poskim come out in favor of celebrating birthdays or not in favor?
Okay, so that's an interesting one to see. What do we do now on a, what do we do on a birthday? Does the birthday represent anything? What do the poskim have to say? So it's interesting. There is a Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah, Perek Gimel, where the Yerushalmi tells us, and it's all learnt from the idea of the Mechomes Amalek, that Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, when the Klal Yisrael were fighting Amalek, lifted his hands. And when he lifted his hands, there was a certain good Muslim, and Klal Yisrael were victorious at that time. The Korban Edah over there explains, and I'm not going to go into the whole sugya, but he explains that when a person has a birthday, there's a certain muzzle. And it's something that gives him the strength that he will not be harmed on that day. And therefore, they specifically made the war, the Muhammad Samalik, on the day that Moshe was born in order to try and ensure that there would be a special siyat d'shmai, there would be a special, greatness to that day that he will be able to, you know, win. And that's what it was. Now, it's true, it's discussing Goyim, but the Magen Avraham does bring down that it could be applying to Yidden as well. In fact, there's a famous question that somebody once asked Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, if somebody has to organize a surgery, should it specifically, because of this Yerushalmi, because of this Korban Eda, be planned on his birthday, specifically because of this? Because this way it's a special muzzle and he'll be stronger. Rav Chaim Kanievsky Lemaisa says it's a tzarachin. I'm not sure because maybe it's only talking about a goy. But al kaponim, it's quite clear that there is something about a birthday, at least in the Korban Eda from the Yerushalmi, that there's something special about that day. They bring down from the Ksav Sofer that the Ksav Sofer on the day of his birthday locked himself in his room. And he didn't allow anybody in. And somebody somehow got into the room and they saw him sitting on the floor crying like a Tisha B'Av. And they saw that he was basically looking at himself and he was talking to himself, making a cheshbon ha-nefesh. How many years have passed? How many years had been wasted? Whatever it is. And it's brought down in many places, like the Minhagei Chabad brings down in Sichas, how it's a cheshbon ha-nefesh. It's a time for cheshbon ha-nefesh. The Munkatsha in Divrei Torah, from Chaim Eliezer Shapiro also, this idea of a birthday. And it's interesting, the Munkatsha, as I mentioned, so in Divrei Torah, so he brings down and he goes against this whole idea. He brings down that, no, you absolutely should not be celebrating on a birthday. What is the simcha? Chazal, as we mentioned before from the Gemara and Ervin, tell us that we rather should not have been created. Says the Munkatcher, so why are you celebrating? You're celebrating being created. Chazal tells us it's better not to have been created. Not only that, there's a Sefer Torah Menachem that he brings down. I'm not sure who writes it, but he says that we were created to serve Hashem, to fulfill a purpose. How can you celebrate if you don't know if you're fulfilling a purpose? So we could see a little bit from some of the poskim, what is the day meant to represent? Is it a day of celebration, of cheshbon ha-nefesh? Or is it maybe, no, what are you doing? This is not a day that we really should be thinking about and celebrating in any way, shape, or form.
So we do have that duality then.
Right.
Okay, interesting. So let's talk about the celebration itself. We're going to celebrate. We'll move forward with that. My kids will be delighted to hear that. So thank you for that, Psak. And the question is, and I want to focus on this, is how do you celebrate? And we can divide it in four, as is common probably throughout the world, is to have a cake. So having a cake and eating it too, right? So having the cake, eating it too. So having the cake, also probably somewhat common or very common, is to have candles on the cake. That's step number two. Step number three, blowing out the candles. And step number four is to make a wish. Okay, so let's walk through step by step. Is there a problem? Is there not a problem? Is there a mitzvah? Number one is having a birthday cake.
Okay, interesting. So I'd like to just maybe to say two things before we go into all the details of the four things that you just mentioned. First of all, I remember myself when I was in yeshiva. So Rav Scheinberg, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg Zatzal, was my Rosh Hashiva in Torah Or. And I specifically remember that when it was his 90th birthday, so the boys got together and they decided to buy him a cake. And they bought him a cake and they came down to the Rosh Hashiva's room, which we went into from time to time to our shilas and whatever it was. It was a big success to be in the building and to ask him questions. And we bought him a cake. And I remember he smiled. And after all, you know, he was American. He grew up in America. So I guess we'll discuss that in a minute of what people do. And he smiled and we asked him, and he wasn't against it. He didn't like throw it out and say, oh, what are you doing over here? This is, you know, we asked him, Rebbe, what do we do on a birthday? What should we do? And this was classic Rav Scheinberg. Anyone that knew Rav Scheinberg, this was like the classic answer. And he said, just learn. You know, that was him. Just learn, you know, whatever, what are you doing? But he wasn't against it. He really wasn't against the cake. He wasn't upset. He wasn't like, oh, chukas ha-goy, it's goy shazach. He smiled, you know, he appreciated it. But obviously his idea was, you know, use it for the positive. And before I move on, I just want to mention this interesting, because we do find that in some of the gedolei achronim and gedolei poskim, that there are many anhogas that they did on a birthday. For example, the Chassam Sofer is famous that he would finish chumash every year on the 7th Zion Tishrei, which was his birthday, and he would finish Chumash for all the Talmidim specifically on that day. Rav Chaim Pelagi brings down in a Sefer Tzedakah L'Chaim that a person on his birthday should give Tzedakah, because a person was created for Tzedakah. Rabbi Elazar Deitch and Ginzer Yosef brings down that a person actually should get a new fruit or get a new item of clothing, and he should make his Shecheyanu, which is, I guess, why I mentioned earlier the idea of Shecheyanu, Lazman Hazeh, we've reached this day, so we can't say it, But I guess he would say, get a new fruit or an item of clothing and make the Shechayana and kind of have in mind the birthday that Hashem has given you another year. The Spinker Rebbe, the Imre Yosef, brings down that some people should add a bit of an avodah, some hanhaga tova, something to their life to become better. The Ben Ish Chaim, Parshas Re'eh, says that he was knowing to make on a birthday in his house, like a Yom Tov, Ben Ish Chaim. And the Leket HaKemach brings down, you should make a Sudas Mitzvah with the Siyam. People would come to a Shmuel Salant on his birthday. He would give out brachas. So before we get to the whole cake thing, just to understand, and we can see clearly from just an example, a handful of examples, that, you know, a birthday was definitely marked by some of the Gedolim. And they did things. What did they do? Obviously, things that have real mamoshes, that have real substance to it, and becoming better, you know, using it as a springboard to become better people. But I think that's the number one. But going back to your question was about...
Even before the halacha on the cake. So growing up in the UK, I sense a little bit of an accent. Actually, yeah. It would be offensive for me to say that, because maybe I have the accent. Because you're the original. But in any case, what did you see growing up? You grew up in which neighborhood in the UK?
So I grew up in Golders Green in London, in England. And birthdays, and in particularly in my house, actually, birthdays were quite choshev. You know, my mother, she lived and be well. She was very, very excited with birthdays. Birthdays meant a lot to her. And to forget a birthday was terrible. And she was really into it. And cards and balloons and decorating the house. She was very, very into it. And it was beautiful. We grew up that way. And birthdays were a nice thing. We had cakes. We had candles.
Candles.
I guess I'll stop right there before I get myself into trouble to what we did afterwards.
And that was the Hanha. Well, let's talk about other people, not the Wiesenfelds in Golders Green. People had candles. They blew them out. You have to blow them out in order to eat the cake. And with this concept of making a wish, they didn't do it in the Wiesenfelds. But elsewhere, did they have this concept of a wish?
It was definitely something that was heard of. It was definitely something that people did. And the truth of the matter is, you know, in a minute, we'll try to get to the halacha aspect of whether it's right or wrong. But sometimes, and maybe this also influences the halacha as well, we do things. Odom Moshech Achasvivov, the Rambam says it clearly, that a person is automatically, you know, goes by his surroundings. It doesn't mean that people were doing it with any specific purpose in mind. It doesn't mean that they were doing it for a certain reason, but it's just, that's the culture that sometimes we live in. And I guess when you live in Chutzlaretz, that's, you know, very much what happens. But without any, you know, negativity or without anything specifically bad, that's what people did. And yeah, people did. They had birthday cakes, they had candles, they blew out the candles. And yes, I'm assuming many of them also made wishes. And it sort of seeped in together with all of the unfortunate many other things that we do in our lives, and unfortunately have seeped in from what the Goyim have been doing. And it was definitely something that people did in England. And I know in America, when I go to America also sometimes, I hear about these things from the boys in yeshiva and these sort of things. So it's definitely something that seems to be a little bit of a worldwide thing.
Yeah, and in Israel, you live in which neighborhood?
I live in Ramayma, near Yerushalayim.
It's a pretty firm neighborhood. So when kids have the parties, I assume they have cakes, or else it's not a party.
Yeah, cakes are something that's, I would assume, very, very standard. And you go to all the stores and the bakeries, they're making birthday cakes. And so obviously people are buying them if that's what they're selling. And the truth is with candles as well, candles is, again, I don't go to that many birthday parties in the area, but I from what I hear and from what I think I know is that there are people buying candles and lighting them and putting on the cakes.
Okay, so let's start walking through this topic. If we're going to have to trace off a minhag of Klal Yisrael now, or live with it.
Okay, so first of all, where does everything come from? You know, it's also good to know, because Chukas HaGoy is something that applies to many situations. Rav Moshe famously has a tshuva that goes through all sorts of interesting shailas, from taking vacations around the 25th of December time. There's all sorts of shailas by a keva. There's all questions of shvuas with flowers. So we find during the year us asking this question, you know, going to football games or baseball games, whatever. Are these things chukas hagoy or not? And the question over here is a birthday cake a chukas hagoy? So there are a couple of ideas to remember. Number one, the Ramah says clearly, when discussing the halachas of Chukas HaGoy, the Ramah says that there are basically three reasons why it would be a problem of Chukas HaGoy. Number one, he says, Avodah Zarah. Number two, superstition. And number three, pritzas. Now, I don't think that, you know, having a cake with a candle or anything similar, I don't think fits into any of those three in any way. And the truth is, you know, just for a moment to take out, and where does it come from? Whether the cake, some want to say that it comes from Germany, maybe, whatever it may be, the candles on the cake, where does that come from? So It seems to be that the historians agree that the minhag, the custom of putting candles on a cake, actually started in ancient Greece, where the Greeks made these honey cakes that were round and they were like a full moon. And they put them on their altar and they put a candle in the middle of the cake, which made the cake appear to glow like the moon. So that's, I guess, one of the first places that we find it. They want to say that maybe Germany is also credited for adding the amount of candles per year that you were, that you're living in this world. Some want to even say that the smoke from the candle carries the wishes that you make at the time all the way up, whatever it may be, which is all very interesting, but it doesn't fit into Chukas HaGoy. That wouldn't be a problem of Chukas HaGoy. But Moshe, also, when he discusses this at length in many different cases, and specifically in Yeredeya Cherek Dalet Siman Yud Aleph, where he brings down that if everybody does something, they're not doing it for a goyish reason. They're doing it because that's what people do. It's geschmack. It's interesting. It's what, you know, not that there's a head to that. Oh, because everyone does it, it must be okay. But it's more that they're not doing it for a goyish reason. There's no specific goyish like minhag, and we're following that minhag. So I don't think it's a problem of Chukas HaGoy. For sure not to have a birthday cake. For sure not to have candles on there. I cannot imagine that would be a problem to have something like that. It's great for the kids. The kids enjoy it. And that's the reason you're doing it. So if that's the reason you're doing it, why would that be a problem of Chukas HaGoy?
Right. So Rav Moshe addresses, effectively, he's not talking about birthday cakes, but he does address it pretty directly. He says, if the non-Jews would take on something, for example, eating, he says it explicitly, if they do it for a pagan purpose, le'echol eizem min advarim hatovim va'ru'uim la'achile, they take on something that is great to eat, enjoyable to eat, that would be a birthday cake. And the fact they do it for a pagan reason, it doesn't mean shelo ya'asar oso amin la'achile. That's not going to prohibit us from having. So I think we have an exact source from the Igros Moshe that the cake itself is not going to be a problem. And arguably, maybe the candles as well, because that makes it more exciting for the kids. I did see some acronym that were not happy with lighting the candles. There's a Rav, he's the Rav in Bat Yam. I don't know if he still is. He wrote the author of Vayitzbor Yosef, who did have a problem with having the candles on the cake. So he said that there's a chukas hagoyim with the candles, but I know that there are other posting that this, because it's exciting. There's a reason for it.
Right. The truth is also, you have to also maybe go to understand who's the Rav that's saying that it's Chukas HaGoy, because sometimes, and again, I'm not familiar with the Rav that you just mentioned, but sometimes if the Rav is saying it because, let's say, you live in a neighborhood or in an area where nobody does these things, and all we've heard about is Goyim doing these things, so, oh, it means if you do this, that must be, it's a Goyish thing. Whereas, you know, myself, for example, that when we grew up, it wasn't a Goyish thing, it's what everyone did. And so maybe, you know, that could also affect the psak of whether that would be a Chukas HaGoy.
Right. Okay, As the postik on the show, we're good with the cake.
We're good with the cake, and we're good with the candles.
So blowing out the candles.
Okay, so blowing out the candles, it doesn't make a difference if it's birthday candles or it's any candle for that matter. Generally, this is how I grew up. Yidden don't blow out things with their mouth. We don't do these things, right? Ner Hashem Nishmas Odom. In fact, it's brought down that blowing out the candles, one of the things that Domoy Barosha, it's a dangerous thing. And there are Rabbi Yisrael Chaim Sonnenfeld, there's a tshuva in Salmos Chaim about it. The Chassidim, I know, are very makbid on it. And again, I don't know exactly where the makor dafka for the Hasidim to be makbid, but I know that Hasidim are extremely makbid. Blowing out a candle, we know that a candle represents a neshama. We know that we'd always light a candle. If someone loses someone, they light a candle for a yortzeit, for example. A candle represents someone, a neshama, because of its way that it, you know, sort of always strives upwards. The flame is always going up. It represents that neshama. You know, to blow out a candle with the mouth is not something that we do. So it doesn't, I don't think it would come really into the Chukas HaGoy question. I think it's more just something that Klal Yisrael don't do. It's something that we don't do. Nothing to do necessarily that the Goyim do this of a birthday cake. It's just Klal Yisrael don't blow out candles. And we should, you know, try to machanach our children to do the things that we need to do in the right way, as opposed to what everybody else does, you know, in that way. Because I think that's a very, very important idea.
Right. So when it comes to the birthday cake, practically speaking, you should get out a fan or something or a snuffer. That's what we use for Avdala. We have a snuffer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, perfect. That would work. You know, and it could be some of the kids like, no, blow it out. No, over here. I think it's a great opportunity for chinuch to show the children that, you know, we don't just do what everyone else does. Klal Yisrael don't do things this way. This is how we do it. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. We'll have the cake. We'll have the candles. But we're not, you know, Yidden don't blow out. I'm sure there are people that do. But again, like I said, generally people are quite makpid to try not to blow out a candle.
Okay. And then the fourth level is the making of the wish, probably the most problematic, I would think.
Yeah, but again, I would not assume that this is specifically tied down to the union of Chukas HaGoy. Again, the Goyim do this, and they do all sorts of things, make your wishes, and they have these wells that you put down the coins and make a wish and all these sorts of things. You know, Klal Yisrael don't need to come onto this. And again, here's a perfect opportunity of being Machana children. Klal Yisrael, we have a Siddur, we have a Tehillim. We can open up our mouths and talk to Hashem anytime during the day. It's an amazing opportunity. It's not specific. Yes, there are times that Eis Lasos, you know, you open up the Aron HaKodesh, or there are certain times of the year that are more, you know, Elul and whatever it is. But at the end of the day, to blow out a candle, which number one is not a great idea, and number two, to make a wish at that time, like what Shaykh has to Yiddishkeit? I really think it's almost like, you know, I always tell my boys in yeshiva when they're going on Shidduchim, do me a favor. Don't get down on one knee. Just do me a favor. Please don't get down. Why? Where does it say that you can't do? It's just such it's so goyish. You know, how much do we have to do? There are certain things that, okay, what can we do? We do things like the goyim in certain things, you know, but at the end of the day, how far does that have to go? And I think blowing out the candle, making a wish, I don't think we can assu it. Now, I don't think anyone can stand up and say it is absolutely assu, because again, I don't know if it's, you know, in any goyish writings that this is something specific that they do. I think it's just such a goyish thing that we've so become familiar with that I don't feel the need to do that. And I think we should mechanech our children. No, we don't make wishes right now.
I did find, right before we got on the call, I found a smach that it's problematic. Okay. A smach.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't talk about birthdays. It doesn't talk about birthdays, okay. But it's in the book of Revelation. It's the final book of the New Testament. And okay. And it says in chapter 8, passage 4, and okay. The smoke of the incense went up with the prayers of the saints out of the hand of the angel before God. So the incense that went up, which is like the candle, it took the prayers, which is the wish, up to heaven. And this is the chelik of the Avodah Zarah, that it's going up to the moon god or something. So we have at least a smach from the book of Revelation, so that it's problematic.
Okay, so if that's the case, then you've made it even stronger. That could also be problematic. I'll be aloha as well. That's true. I hear that.
So recap, cakes are good. Have your favorite flavor. Candles we can live with. Don't blow them out with your mouth, and don't make a wish.
Yep.
Okay. Have a tefillah. Say a tehillim. Let's move on to one last question. It's not about the celebrations of how to celebrate the birthdays per se, but bar and bas mitzvah. So is this a mitzvah to celebrate? Is this not a mitzvah to celebrate? How would we treat those? Are they more significant than a regular birthday that we've talked about, or are they just like a regular birthday?
It's an interesting question, and it's a little bit of a sensitive one, you know, because people do take these things very, very seriously. And sometimes it's not kedai to knock things that everybody does as well. We do find, obviously, a bar mitzvah, obviously, because a boy is mekabel, old Torah and mitzvahs. And not only that, we do find interesting ideas in some of the svarim about specific birthdays, whether it's 90, whether it's 60, whatever it is. 13, we know, has a real makor. 12, you know, Rav Moshe, for example. Rav Moshe talks about it in his tshuva, Nerachayim, Chedek Aleph, Simen Kuf Dalet, and he talks about the idea of making some kind of simcha for girls when they become 12 years old. And he goes through very much of the specifics of whether you should do it in shul, you should not do it in shul, whatever it is. And he seems to say, if I'm correct in understanding the tshuva, that it's like a regular birthday. It's no different to a regular birthday. It's not something more specific. I think it's just become something that, you know, a boy has his part, so let the girl have her part. And the truth of the matter is, you know, I don't know if it's anything bad. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, they do have specific conditions when the school, you know, my girls are in Beis Yaakov, how you're allowed to do a bas mitzvah, who you're allowed to invite. They don't want it to be made into a huge event, but that could also be for, you know, financial, you know, reasons that they don't want people to get too involved in all the finances and turn into a huge simcha. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure it's a bad thing. Specifically, if, you know, we're telling the girls that you're bas mitzvah now you have to fast when there's a fast day, now there's certain mitzvahs, this, that, and the other. You know, I don't know if it's a specifically bad thing. People do it. Why, you know, it's not specifically anything wrong than any other birthday, and you want to make more of a thing of it, or why are you doing that? Because bas mitzvah. So in a way, it's being done in a sort of Jewish way, that you're showing them, look, you're now chayv in the mitzvahs. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And when it comes to a bar mitzvah, then that would be, he's coming in, accepting upon himself the whole of mitzvahs, then there would be a basis to have a sudas mitzvah.
Yeah, that's avada sudas mitzvah. And then forget, we're showing the boy, we're showing the bar mitzvah boy that, you know, we're celebrating the fact that now you can do mitzvahs, now you can put on tefillin, now all your mitzvahs are real, they're not just, you know, for chinuch purposes. This, you become a man, you can join a minyan. We're showing him, and I think it's always geschmack, like a three-year-old boy. We'll bring a three-year-old boy by the upshur before his haircutting, and, you know, we'll give him the honey and a licking off the letters. Why do we do that? Because we want to show them that Torah is sweet. Yiddishkeit is geschmack, there's so much, you know. Unfortunately, we're living in a world where sometimes things are a little bit dry, and you know, we're sort of kind of competing with almost like, I shouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it, Hollywood. It's difficult. We're living in a hard generation where, you know, everyone's busy with, you know, where's the best steak and the best restaurant. And unfortunately, that's a lot of people's direction. And here we are. We've got a bar mitzvah boy. Yes, people spend a bit too much. That could be. And they make problems for the neighbors that don't have the money. That's not our discussion of simchas and how they should be, you know, properly spent and whatever. But the idea to make a celebration for a boy that becomes bar mitzvah, and even a girl that becomes bar mitzvah, I think you're showing them, forget, you are now chai be mitzvahs. It's beautiful. We're going to associate that with a simcha, with dancing, with music, with a sudas mitzvah. I think that's very, very nice.
Very good. Rabbi Wiesenthal, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for the wonderful opportunity.
Joining us now is Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Ron. Rabbi Ron is a popular lecturer at a number of yeshivas and seminaries in Yerushalayim. He is the author of two fascinating books on Tanakh, Sefer Gadol VeKatan, actually Katan VeKadol, and also Sefer HaIkar VeChaser, as well as dozens of articles in numerous publications. Rabbi Ron also has a PhD in Jewish theology. And we were actually Daf Yomi Chavrusa 30 years ago in Yeshiva, way back when. And in fact, I remember back then that Rabbi Ron used to get into very interesting, fascinating, and unusual topics, and thought he would be very appropriate for joining us here today. Rabbi Ron, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Rabbi Wasserman.
So, Rabbi Ron, let's talk about a little bit background. Growing up in Brooklyn, we're obviously talking about cakes, birthday celebrations.
Birthday cakes, yeah.
So growing up, how did you celebrate specifically when it came to cakes?
When it came to cakes, our minhag was to get an ice cream cake from Carvel. And we would have an ice cream cake, yeah. And since then, I have been having ice cream on my birthday, even to this very day. Not always in cake form, but there's ice cream.
And candles?
Candles. Mistama, there were candles. I found there's an old photograph I dug up when you told me about this. And there appear to have been candles on the cake indeed. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so that was in Brooklyn. You moved to Eretz Yisrael, and yes. I assume kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah, they have candles. They have even today, if you go to restaurants in Yerushalayim, and then you say, hey, it's my birthday, and they give you a free dessert, they put a sparkler in it, you know, because it's as if a candle, you know, they're not going to... with a candle, but they put a sparkler in.
Now, a difference between candles and sparklers is candles you need to blow out.
That's right. And the sparklers run themselves out.
Okay, so that may be an important distinction.
It could be. I feel from the restaurant's perspective, it's maybe like more of a safety issue, like from their perspective. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But to have a candle or some kind of fire thing on a cake, I think everyone does that. It's expected. It's expected. That's how you know it's a birthday cake.
So you live outside Yerushalayim.
I live in Gush Etzion, yeah.
So what would you say is the hanhaga in various areas in Israel, having researched this topic?
Look, I found that birthday cakes with candles on it seem to be more or less universal, going from secular people to Haredi people. And that's how you define a birthday cake. A birthday cake is something, it has frosting on it, it has maybe lettering on it, and it has candles on it. That's how you know that's an identifier of a birthday cake, I think, across the board.
Okay,
across
so the board. In order to eat it, the candles have to be blown out.
That, yes, otherwise, okay. Yes.
Now, there is also I'm not going to call it a minhag, but a custom that yeah. some people may have of yeah. when they blow out the candles to make a wish.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, baloney. I mean, that's obviously baloney. It's not like your wish is going to come true, but that's a different development of the whole process of how birthday cakes came to have candles, and then it's all part of a long process. Okay, so that's a later part of the process.
Okay, so let's take a step back then. Yes. Let's talk about A, birthday cakes, B, candles on birthday cakes,
yes.
C, blowing out candles,
okay.
And C, D, would be making a wish. So again, cake is A.
Let's
number
start
one
with
is cake. Let's start with that.
Okay.
Number two, then we'll get to having candles, blowing out candles, and eventually we will talk about making that wish. So walk us through.
Okay.
So is this a proper thing or improper?
Okay. Well, okay. To know if it's proper or improper, the issue that we're dealing with is chukot akum, chukot agoyim. So the question is this something that's prohibited for Jewish people to do? Because clearly Jewish people did not invent this. Yes, it wasn't a Jewish person who, that was not that. So if a goy invented it and Jewish people now do it, is that okay? So we have to figure out about chukot akum. So chukot akum, there are basically two ways to define it. So we'll start with the Maharik's definition. The Maharik's definition is what the Rama brings. The Maharik understands as follows. Like the word chok is a rule that doesn't have any reason behind it. So it's something that goyim do without a reason, then that is something that we cannot do. And the issue is, because if it's something done without a reason, then it could very well be that it originated in some kind of avodah zarah, pagan, superstition, some kind of thing like that. That's why it's being done. So therefore, if there's no reason for something, then we might assume that, that's the origin of it, and therefore it has to be avoided. But the Rama says, for example, that if something that is done for, like he gives the example of kavod, then, well, that's a reason, so, you know, you can do it. That is the Maharik's definition. That's what the Rama brings down. So, you know what, let's give an example. Since the Shulchan Aruch brings it by clothing, let's talk about something like a necktie, okay? Necktie. Now, Jewish people didn't invent neckties. Okay, good.
They would never do such a thing.
They would never do such a thing, you know? I don't know. I heard Rav Nevensal once told, when I was teaching in the Tivari, Rav Nevensal told one of the rabbeim not to wear a necktie. So he says, why? He says, he said, it's an issue of gaiva. And he says, also, it shows separation between the head and the heart. It's like a gartel, you know, between the head and the heart.
That moved up too high.
Moved up too high. So, you know, neckties, we know it started with Louis the 14th. He started that fashion trend. Okay. They got it from Croatian people. Then they got in Paris. Then everyone, and there's no reason for it, right? You're wearing a thing around your neck. There's no reason for it. However, you say, listen, nowadays it shows kavod, right? That's the world understands that it shows kavod, right? Okay. So you got a mechubed thing, you have to wear a tie. So according to the Maharik, the reason is to show kavod. So then it's legit. It's okay. Now the Vilna Gaon, he has, let's call it a stricter definition. And his definition is, it's only okay if it's something that Jewish people would have done zulatan. Even if the goyim didn't do it, Jewish people would do it anyway. So it's not because like a goy thought of it, then it's not going to be chukot akum. So let's give an example.
That means it has to have a reason. We would have thought of it independently.
That's right. That's like let's say a white coat, a white lab coat for a doctor. So a Jewish person could have thought of that too. He said, listen, you know, you want to show hygiene, you want to show that you're clean. Okay. The thing is, but let's give our example of a necktie. I don't know, you know, a necktie. I don't know, would any Jewish person ever say, you know what, it's more covered. You tie something around your neck. You feel like you're strangling. I don't know. That's a tougher definition. That's really a tougher definition. So, but those are the two definitions. Now again, the Rama, that's the Maharik's definition. That's what's in the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. Okay. Fair. Now I will tell you that Rav Moshe, though, even according to the Gra, he says that there are certain, let's call it leniencies, even that. And he says like this, that if there was something, someone asked Rav Moshe about bringing food to a shiva house. Like you bring a platter. Yeah. Now I'll tell you, I don't know, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, there was no such thing. You would
for Ashkenazim.
Yeah, for Ashkenazim. That's true. You're right. For Ashkenazim, there was no such thing, right? Even to the degree that when you go to a shiva house, if there happened to be food there, you never ate that food.
You wouldn't touch it.
You wouldn't touch that food, right? They have, you know, the angel wing bow ties. You're not going to eat that stuff. So someone asked Rav Moshe, is this something that we it's okay to do? Is it chukot akum? Because he says, you know, go and do it. You know, come to a wake, you bring a, you know, whatever it is. So Rav Moshe writes that even according to the Vilna Gaon, he says, if it is something that we don't do, mishum sheken nohagin hanochren, ela shosim misarad atzman, that we now do it for our own reason and not because goyim do it. So there, and he says, this is even according to the Vilna Gaon to say such a thing. So let's say, imagine something like Goyim do invent, like Waldorf salad, you know? You put what? Apples and celery together. No Jew would have ever thought of such a thing, right? You're gonna, fruits and vegetables, who does that? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But now a Jewish person says, you know, a Waldorf salad tastes good, you know? And so now you do it for your own reason, not for a Goyish reason. So therefore, he says, even that, according to the Vilna Gaon, can work. That's what he says. So therefore, now let's apply the necktie example. If Jewish people say for our, you know, we're not doing it because Goyim think it's a mechubad thing, but for our own purposes, you know, somehow now in our understanding, we feel that it's, then it could have shifted. That's such a thing that Rav Moshe, you know, has. So in other words, something could be like kashered almost in a sense, you know? Yeah.
As long as it has a rationale.
That's right. But if it's something completely irrational, that's the worst of the worst, you know? Because if it's something completely irrational that there's no reason for, then there's a heavy suspicion that this is an old, old, problematic, avodah zarah, horrible thing.
Uh-huh. So let's apply that now to step number one, birthday cakes.
Okay. Now, the cake itself, the fact is we have records of non-Jewish people talking about having a cake to celebrate a birthday specifically. That goes back to around the year zero. You have Ovid. He is a Latin poet. He is a Roman. And he writes about him and his brother having birthday cakes. Now, there's no candles, no frosting, just as that they had cakes. Now, the thing is, though, that we do find that having a cake to mark a special occasion is something that also Jewish people did going way back. Like, for example, the Rokeach, when he brings the minhag of, you know, the little kid when he first learns Torah and you have the, you know, with the aleph bed and the honey, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now he brings that not in association with birthdays, but in association with Shavuos. And then part of that minhag, the Rokeach says, is you bring a cake that has honey, a honey cake in it, and it has inscribed on it, you know, certain, you know, parts of Psukim and things like that. So this is already in time of the Rishonim, Jewish people. Now, again, it wasn't a kid's birthday or anything, but it was a special occasion. You have a cake, yeah? The Aruch brings, you know, the, you know about Rav Elazar HaKalir, you know, the big Paitan of Paitanim, yes? So how did he become such a big genius Paitan? So the Aruch brings the legend. Okay, let's call it a legend. He says that the word Kalir, he says he heard it means cake, and his parents brought him a cake that had like a kameya inscribed on it or in it, and he ate it and he became very smart.
Where do you get one of those?
I know, right? Special cake like that is a good cake to market, you know? So there were special cakes for kids to mark special occasions. So cakes is, I'm going to say, like a universal thing that people would do. So then once you consider a birthday a special occasion,
then you have a cake.
Then you have a cake. You know, that's how you show that it's something special.
Okay. Yeah. So let's move on. Step two, putting candles on a cake.
Now, candles is where things get complicated because first I'm just going to tell the listening audience out there, what people like to do is they bring a quote from a Greek historian from the third century minus, yes? This is before Hanukkah. This is Philochorus. Now, Philochorus, he wrote like a history of Athens. And this was like a certain kind of thing that old Greek writers would like to do, like day-to-day life in Athens. You know, people would wake up in the morning, this is what they'd eat, this is what they do. Okay. Now, he wrote a 17-volume work, but none of it survived, just bits and pieces. In one of those bits and pieces, he talks about a certain celebration for this Greek goddess called Artemis. And Artemis was associated with two things, bears and moons. And they had this celebration. It was on in the middle of the month because it was the full moon. And part of that full moon, he says, they would have a cake. And the way he describes the cake is that it had lighted candles on the cake in a circle. Now that's Artemis. And people said, oh, because lighted candles, it makes a circle. And it was during the full moon. So it represents full moon and the light and all this business. Yes.
And Artemis was?
Artemis was a Greek goddess.
A Greek goddess.
Yes. This is like actual part of the Avodah Zarah is that they would bring a cake and it had candles on it.
Every month.
Now, the fact is the scholars, some, it's not so pashut. Some of them say it was every month. Some of them say it was only once a year, like in May. But, you know, since it's bits and pieces, it's hard to put it together. Now, the thing is, but now here's the thing. It wasn't Artemis's birthday. Yes? And the fact is, the first time we read about A birthday cake with candles? It's in 1746 in Germany. So I'm just going to say that to connect, definitively there was a cake with candles in Greece, right? But 2,000 years later, there's a birthday cake with candles in Germany. I'm not saying there's a continuity there, is what I'm saying. Now, the thing is, what people do is, and this is what happens, that one person says, writes it down and says, oh, Artemis' birthday, you know, that's like a birthday cake. Then everyone like starts copying it, you know, and then it's like, but if you go back to the original source, it really doesn't have to do with birthdays. Now, the earliest references to birthday cakes with candles, that is in Germany. That's a German thing. And the earliest written reference is, and you even have the date of it, May 26th, 1746. It was the 60th birthday of Count Ludwig von Zinzendorf. And you could read about it. I read it in this English translation of it in this work, The History of the Moravians, which came out in 1754. And they describe the whole birthday party, and it gets crazy. The guy says, I've never seen this behavior, even in army barracks, you know? But part of the thing is, and here I'll read the quote, they say there was a cake as large as any oven could be found to bake it, holes made in the cake according to the years of the person's age, everyone having a candle stuck into it. And then there was one extra candle in the middle
for
this count's 60th birthday.
So there were 59 around and 60th or 60 plus one?
60 plus one in the middle. And this is already, I think people are saying, oh, this is like how we're familiar with birthday cakes. You know, you have candles around and one in the middle. Yeah, I think this is sort of familiar. And from that point on in the 1800s, you start having more German records of this. And people even, there was the German literary figure Goethe. He talks about at his birthday, they made one. And he says that it was his 60th birthday. No, it was 50th birthday. And there were so many candles that they didn't have room for the extra one. He says, children, there's always room for the extra one. But he didn't have, you know, because there's so many candles.
And the extra one is for?
It's for life.
It's for life. It's to continue.
It's continuity. It's a continuity.
Ad mea vestrim. At least one more year.
That is correct. Now we have to understand where this all came from, okay? Now, the way to understand it is like this. Because in Germany, there was a minhag of a certain kind of a candle. And this candle, there's a German word for it. But you look up Leben life candle, that's what it is, yes? And it's a long candle, and it has notches on it, like looks like a ruler, yeah, or a thermometer. On the top, it says 1, 2, 3, goes all the way down. This was something that people would, when a baby's born, you buy this as a gift, you give it to the family, okay? And what does the kid do? When it's his first birthday, they light that candle. It burns down level one, blow it out, put away the candle. Next year, break it out again, burn it, you know, goes down to level two. Now, in the olden days, these candles would reach around 12, because that's when now you're grown up, so enough, you know. But nowadays, they make them, I saw now, till 18. You could find them, they make till 18, because, you know, now people are kids for much longer, yeah?
And 25, 30, right. 35,
they're still 40. At home, you know, 30, I'm playing video games in the basement. Yeah, so this was a candle. Now, you know, so why do they blow out the candle? Because you have to save it for next year, right? But this is because the Germans have a whole svara about candles, which is very different than Jewish people. And which is the idea like this. I'll tell you, there's a folk tale that the Grimm brothers bring. Yes, the brothers Grimm. And the story is called Godfather Death. Yes, this has not been made into a Disney movie yet. People are not familiar with this. Now in German, you know what the name of the story is in German? Der Gevatter Tod, Godfather Death. Because Gevatter means Godfather, yes.
Kvater,
yes. So in the story, this guy meets Death, and Death shows him a cave where he has candles, right? And it says like this. He says, here the large ones belong to children. The half-consumed ones are middle-aged people, and the little ones are the really old people. But then he says, yet children and young people oftentimes have but a little candle. Sometimes a kid, you know, that's what happens. This is a sad thing. They have a little candle. The Germans understood that the candle represents a person's life. So therefore, as long as the candle continues to exist, that represents your life continuing to exist. So if you blow out the candle, now, so that's good, because now the candle's not burning down anymore. So that's good news. That was their kind of thinking regarding it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the candle representing your life, is that superstitious or is that just a concept?
I don't know. It's like a fun thing. Apparently Germans were very into candle making. They were like festive, you know, like now in Israel, Tzfat is all candles, they have special candles there, you know? Germans were, they loved decorative candles. And the fact is that if people who have researched this, they found that in all the early references to candles on a cake, all German. And even going into the 1800s, you know, you have that. It caught on in America more or less from the 1920s and on. It became an American thing and then became like an everybody thing. But it was really a German, let's call it like a folk thing, if you want to say. Yeah. In terms of what I found, I didn't find that it's related to like, you know, I don't know, like Shadim or anything like that. It was just like, I don't know, like a fun thing in a sense, you could say. Yeah, it seems weird. But that's what it is. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's bring, if we're not relating it back to the original moon god.
It's really a German folk custom that then spread to everybody. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when it comes to chukas agoyim, if we apply the two standards.
So now the thing is like this. So let's say let's start with the gra. Would a Jewish person have thought about sticking candles on a cake? Probably not. I would imagine that, no. Yes? Right. According to the Maharik, though, is there a reason? The reason is, like, it's festive. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant with that pie a la mode, or, you know, when they chop up foods and there's, like, a fire, you know? So it's, like, festive. That fire's going
excitement.
On. Excitement. It makes excitement. Yes, yes, yes. That kind of a thing. So there, you know, from that perspective, you know, it's like, okay, it's an exciting thing. They came up with the idea fire is exciting, So, you know, it's not so crazy, I would say. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if we now go to step three,
yeah.
Is blowing out the candles.
Okay, now blowing out the candles, that's really where we get to, I would say, the complication. The complication is because, you know, you have the Kolbo, and the Kolbo writes, as he says, that if you blow out a candle with your mouth, like make a foo and blow it out, then there's a complication. And you're going to be nichta. You know, you're going to get, let's say, epilepsy, we can say, right?
Now, he says, if you make a foo, is that, that's the sound that you make when you blow it out.
Yeah, but he says, if you blow it out, bapeh, with your mouth. Yes? Okay, so with your mouth, then this is going to be problematic. Now we know that the Gemara that has a parallel list of this doesn't include this in the list. But the Kolbo writes it, and other people, you know, write afterwards. You know, it appears in the Ben Ish Chai, it appears all over the place. Not to blow out a candle with your mouth. And imagine that there's people listening that they know growing up, you know, when Ima lights the Shabbos candles, you know, then she like drops the match, you know, but I guess there's other reasons also for that. You know, you always let the candles, you know, go down. You never blow them out, right? I would say Yidden, Jewish people don't really, you don't blow out candles.
Havdalah candles.
Havdalah candle, right? You have the wine on, right? It's not with your mouth, yes? Now you say, so why not with your mouth? So the thing is like this, look, first of all, in Mishlei we have, right, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. A person's neshama is like a lamp, we can say. Okay, so we have, and this, we have associations all the time with this, right? We have a candle for every person in the family that we light, you know, Yom Kippur, and now a Shabbos we do it. We have a Yurtzeit candle. And also we have in Bereshit that when Hashem makes Adam Arishon, it says, Vayipach Be'apav Nishmat Chayim. So our association is the blowing is life, and a candle is life. So it's like contradictory, we'll say, concepts. If it comes to blow out, to end the flame, as if symbolically to end a life, that's a, let's call it, it's a contradictory thing. I'll tell you, you know what it's like? Like a pregnant woman doesn't go to a cemetery, yes? Pregnant woman, she has new life in her. Cemetery is a place where there's matim. So the two things don't go together. So therefore, blowing is life. Candles is life. So you don't ruin, blowing is supposed to create life, not to extinguish life. So therefore, I'm going to say, even though people just say, what? Epilepsy makes epilepsy. You have to understand what happens when epilepsy, you fall down, right? Like, because you fall, like you don't have life, right? You're like, you know, that's what's happening. You're flailing around. Like, you don't have like real life. It's not like strong in you. So therefore, like conceptually, it's something that doesn't go together. So that's why, you know, that's why I even found that I saw this Haredi people, they say that when it's a birthday, they have a cake and they have candles, because they do. And then the Ganenet sends home a special fan that the kid, he'll use the fan to make the candles go out, not with his mouth. Yes. Because you have, it's mamish the motion that a Kadosh Baruch Hu does, like pach pa pav, you know, it's, you know, and then, you know, the Shama, that's his nose, it smells, it's always air and waves, right? Breath, that's all. So you can't use it for an anti. That's the problem. Yeah.
So far we've said birthday cake. Okay.
I'm
just eating a cake.
Yeah, just eating a cake. It's festive.
Having candles.
Festive.
Maybe the girl wouldn't like it, but the Marik, we have excitement.
Yeah, it's excitement.
And blowing out the candles, avoiding putting it out any other candle.
I would say that that's something that that it's not the Jewish way. It's not the Hamish way to blow out candles under any circumstances. I'm going to say, no matter how you stand on the Kolbo and you're saying, look, I don't know, Kolbo writes that. I don't know. There's a correlation between blowing out candles and epilepsy. I don't say, okay. But I'm just saying it's not the Jewish way.
By mouth.
By mouth, by fan, you know, look, it happens to blow out. It blows out, you know. But, you know, listen, the Rama writes about this with, you know, they would write light candles for every member of the family on Yom Kippur, you know. This is, oh, and if it would blow out, you know, you can't ask a goy to relight it, you know? Why does he have to say that? Because people, you know, it frightened people when a candle would get blown out. It was scary for people, you know? So what? And that, so for you to, like, the mazed, blow out a candle, you know, what are you doing? Especially if, based on the whole folklore issue idea, the number of candles represents your, you know, your, it's like a very scary thing to start doing such a thing. Yeah.
So you could turn over your cake and dip it into grape juice or wine.
Or hose it down if you want or something. I've seen that some people say that what you do is you say the word Purim, you know, and you say it really loud, you know, Purim, and then the candle goes out. But I don't like that either, because it's still the breath from your, you know,
right.
It shouldn't be coming from the breath from you. Yes. You know, the word neshama, linsham, it's all breathing life. We don't want to use that as an anti-life force. Yeah. CPR. That's good. Right. Putting breath into somebody else. Right. That's really good. But this is an anti. We don't want that.
Okay, so yeah. That's step four.
We're making a
wish.
Listen, why? Making a wish? There's no Jewish person's going to make a wish. I mean, that's actually just crazy. That is ridiculous. And that's just like, mamish, like narishkeit. I mean, that's like, what? Tooth fairy. What? Do Jewish people say, there's a malach of teeth? No, there's no such thing, right? The thing is, again, with that, I didn't really find that it's based on like a superstition per se. It seemed that it started with making it like fun, because look, you can't eat the cake as long as there's fire on it, right? So everyone's waiting to eat the cake. Now, how are they going to eat it? So the kid, he's the Baal Simcha. So he's like, has control, you know? It's like Tati when he does Netilat Yadayim last, you know? So the kid has control. And then it's almost like, okay, but, you know, we got to get this thing going so that to encourage the kid who's the center of attention to blow out the candles, you say it's a good thing for you to blow out the candles. But it's like, I would say that's real hardcore narishkeit, you know? And to the degree, you know how the Rambam says that Jewish people are not supposed to believe in magic, because Jewish people who are chachamim and nevonim, you know, they shouldn't get involved in such shtuyot, you know? So I don't even know if it's chukot agayim per se, but it's just actual, you know, narishkeit. So you shouldn't do it, you know, from that perspective.
So, yeah. Rabbi Ron, just to recap real quickly, tell me if I have it correctly.
Yes, yes.
Birthday cake,
enjoy.
Have a cake. Candles, okay.
Yeah, fair.
Blowing them out, don't.
No, it's not, you know, no.
And make a wish. Don't make a wish.
No, not at all. But I will tell you that the German custom is so strong that the original way Germans would do it is they have the candles were in these like wooden receptacles that looked like flowers. And even today, when you buy those little plastic thingies to put your birthday candles in, there's like a little flower thing over there, right? Like, it's such a strong thing that the whole world now does. And it's mamish. All the things are exactly the way the Germans would do it.
Very good. Well, Rabbi Roan, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It's
my pleasure. It's my pleasure. It's great to see you again. It's great to see you again. Sure.
We look forward to next time.
Yeah. And happy birthday.
Joining us now is Rabbi Simon Jacobson, who is the author of Toward a Meaningful Life, the founder of the Meaningful Life Center. He is a renowned international speaker, lecturer. We actually started airing the show, Rabbi Jacobson, this morning, a number of hours ago, and we got a number of emails from a Chabad Shaliach, another Chabadnik, saying, "You forgot the view of Chabad. Birthdays is a big issue with Chabad." So I appreciate you getting on the phone on such short notice. I understand you just flew back from Asia just now. I think I was talking with you to ask you if you could be on the show from the airport probably. So that was just a short while ago. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be here. And always beautiful to talk about birthdays, which is the beginning of all our lives, you know?
That's true. Hayom hara salam. So it is the beginning of each of our lives. So what's the view of Chabad? Because it was interesting. The response was immediate on this. You need to hear about Chabad, and people were sending links and this and that. So I didn't get to read any of them. So walk us through. What's the big deal here?
Well, it's actually ironic in a way. I'm not sure what you covered. But in Chabad, birthdays were celebrated. Of course, the birthdays of the great leaders like the Baal Shem Tov on the 18th day of Elul, the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, Shulchan Aruch, also on the 18th day of Elul. And in general, birthdays are very significant. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, which is the 7th Lubavitcher Rebbe that we're talking about, began to encourage people to celebrate birthdays. And he was actually criticized by the Torah Welt. I don't know if you know this, because they said, where do we celebrate birthdays? The only time you have a birthday is Paroi's birthday in Chumash. You know, where do we, and you don't really find a history of birthdays being honored. Yahrzeit, yes. We all know Yahrzeit, but a birthday. And the Rebbe actually cited different sources in the Yerushalmi that it says, Mazali Goyver, is the day the mazel is strengthened, even though it's true, it's talking about
Amalek. He was talking about Amalek.
Exactly. But the Rebbe's point was that it's not because the birthday is a negative thing. They happen to be leaders that celebrated their birthdays. The concept of a birthday signifies that God sent a neshama down to this world. If it happens to be Amalek's neshama and Paroi's neshama, why should we suffer? So to speak. We were also chosen by God. So the Rebbe said that birthdays, it's true, they weren't publicly celebrated like in Shas, in Mishnah, in time of Gemara, and so on, but privately, yes. And he said also a Zohar that says that the Yitzchak's birthday was celebrated by Avram Avinu. B'yom HaGomel was Yitzchak's birthday. And as well as the Zohar says that the Bar Mitzvah is celebrated not only because it's a bar mitzvah, but because also the day of your birth. So there are sources, but there's also a logic behind it. And that is exactly that. You know, my book, Toward a Meaningful Life, you mentioned, in the chapter on birth, I quote the Rebbe saying, birth is God saying you matter. So like the Gemara says, a father and mother, they're three partners. The father and the mother provide the body, and the Eibishter, Hashem, provides the neshama. So there's no one born on this world, Jew or non-Jew for that matter, that is not here because if God doesn't want them here, they wouldn't be here. So as much as we can do our ishtadlus, our effort, God has to choose a neshama from Gan Eden and say that neshama is coming down precisely on this day. So we don't celebrate conception, we celebrate birth, because according to halacha, uber yerech imay, a fetus is still part of the mother. The independent child is considered the moment you cut the umbilical cord, the day of a birth. So birthday really is celebrating Hashem sending you to this world and saying, I want you here. You're needed. You're indispensable. And every morning when we say, Moda ani lefanecha, melechai v'kayim shechzarta b'nishmasi, God is renewing the contract that began at your birth. So in effect, a birthday is just like Rosh Hashanah, we celebrate the birthday of the world, which, by the way, is the birthday of man, not of the world. The world was created on the 25th of Elul. It's the birth of the human being. Why? because he's the crown, the human being is the crown jewel, the purpose of existence. So it's actually, we celebrate the human race, the birth of the human race every Rosh Hashanah. So in a microcosm, Olam Katanzel, other persons like a microcosm. So the Rebbe started strongly encouraging celebration of birthdays, but not way of Kedusha, not just birthday cakes and birthday gifts, adding in Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasodim, making a Fabrengen, taking on new resolutions. In other words, making the day live up to the purpose for you, which you were created, is to serve God. So a birthday should be used as a day of introspection and a day of taking on new resolutions and matayv to do it with others and turn it into a simcha shel mitzvah, but always connected with Kedusha, not just a birthday party of, like I said, a cake and gift, which is all fine, but that was the main thing. Now, interestingly, when the Rebbe came out with this, people criticized him, as I said. But the Rebbe felt strongly, because they said, if this is true, it wasn't done before. The approach was always, there's more darkness, we need to bring more light. You know, if you want to, by before, the Rebbe once wrote to somebody, they say, if you want to just follow Minig HaVaseinu B'Yadeinu, then you shouldn't read the New York Times, or you shouldn't go online, and you shouldn't do other things. The fact is, we're doing a lot of things that our grandparents didn't do. So for sure, we should add in Kedusha. Basically, it was about more Cheshech, more Kedusha.
Is that very interesting? So how did the Rebbe celebrate his own birthday? And were you ever at one of his parties?
Was, and there's a book called Hayom Yom, Day by Day, that the Rebbe composed in the year 1943, and where he collects little vertlach, little pisgamim, thoughts, ideas, customs, each day, just a few lines. It became very popular because, you know, it's short. On the day of his own birthday, the 11th of Nisan, right before Pesach, the 11th of Nisan, the Rebbe writes there that on a birthday, one should be very introspective and like make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting of your life, of your year, and taking on, obviously, a new and better approach in the coming year. Now, many people didn't know it was his birthday, the 11th of Nisan in 1943. Later, when people found out it was his birthday, it seemed very interesting. So the Rebbe himself, when he became Rebbe in 1950, so 1952, he turned 50 years old. He was born on the 11th of Nisan, Tofresh Samach Beis, equivalent of 1902. So 1952, now he's a Rebbe. Before he was Rebbe, you know, he was a private citizen and many people didn't have access. And even if someone knew it was his birthday, what are you going to do? Call him? You know, it wasn't like, but now that he's a Rebbe, so the Rebbe himself, the way he did it, he said a Maimer Chassidus, a discourse on the Pasuk Adnai Sfasei Tiftach, which is Kapitel Nun Aleph. Because there's a custom from the time of the Baal Shem Tov that every year you should say, every day, you should say the Kapitel Tilim that corresponds to your birthday plus one. In other words, your future birthday. So if you're age 50, you say Psalm 51. Age 60, Psalm 61. So the Rebbe said a Maimer, a discourse on that Pasuk, on that verse, explaining it according to Chassidus. And he had a Fabrengen. I wasn't born yet, so I didn't participate in that. When he turned 60, which would be 1962, there was a bigger Fabrengen. And again, he spoke a lot. So the way he celebrated a birthday party, so to speak, was not exactly the conventional party. It was more a time of Torah and a time of a Fabrengen and the Chaim and a lot of learning, a lot of teaching, and a lot of discussion about taking on new mitzvah, new hiddur and mitzvahs, and Avedah Satfila and learning Torah. So I was still a child then, 1962. By 1971, because people still ask the Rebbe every year, why don't you make a Fabrengen on your birthday? And the Rebbe refused. And this was pretty in sync with his humility. But in 1971, he finally agreed. And from then on, every year at his birthday became a big Fabrengen on the 11th of Nisan. A big Fabrengen where the Rebbe would speak, and especially in Yoni Pesach, because right before Pesach, and in general about, he didn't necessarily speak about a birthday every year. But I want to share an interesting thing. At birthdays, most of us receive gifts, right? Everybody sends you gifts. The Rebbe instituted giving gifts. By his birthday, he began to give gifts. He would give dollars. And I remember in 1982, when he turned when he turned 80 years old, the Rebbe gave out a Tanya to every person at the Fabrengen until 7 o'clock in the morning. He stood all night.
Till the next morning.
All night. I'm sorry? An 80-year-old man giving out a birthday gift. But I always struck me that it seems right. You know, on a birthday, you should be showing what you're able to give, not what you're able to take.
Right.
And that's what he...
Beautiful. And one last question for you. Celebration now for kids and adults of Chabad, how do they celebrate nowadays?
So I want to add one important point, exactly. In 1988, when the Rebbe lost his wife, the Rebbetzin Chaim Mushka, she was born, interestingly, on Chof Hei Adar, which according to the second day of Rabbi Yeshua, is the birth of the world. Okay? So the Rebbe instituted then, in her honor, he said, not formally. Till then, it was more informal. Formally said that every person should celebrate on their birthday, and actually gave out, that's what I wanted to send you, Minhagi Yom Haledes, which became part and parcel. I should add, not only for Chabad, I know thousands of people that celebrate their birthdays as a result of this call. But you know, it doesn't matter who's, we're not pulling rank here. And the Rebbe spoke then about, I'll just tell you quickly, that a person should get an aliyah on the Shabbos before the Yom Haledes. We're talking, of course, now boys and men. And I'm reading literally from all these directives, to add in giving charity before Shachris and Mincha on Shabbos, if the birthday is on Shabbos, to give it on Friday or Erev Yom Tov, to add in the Kavana, the Tefillah, davening, thinking about God, to also increase in saying Tehillim, Psalms, to learn that Mizmer Tehillim that corresponds to your birthday, the new. In other words, if you turn 40, the Kapitel 41, to add additional measure of learning, both in Nigla and Chassidus, in addition to all the learning you do already, to learn a Hasidic discourse, preferably by heart, at least part of it, and to repeat it to a group of your friends and colleagues, to increase in some good deed with another person, and finally, well, three more things. These by the two, be more introspective and take time, private time, to think about your own thoughts, to correct things that you feel should be corrected, to take on resolutions for the new year, to take on one additional zehiros, careful, some hidur or care, and finally, to have a fabrengen, a gathering of family, and thanking God for giving you another year, and maybe make shechiyanu on a new peri, on a new fruit, or a new garment. And all with simcha shel Torah and simcha shel mitzvah. So this is the way in Chabad they do it. Obviously, this is really pretty universal. I think every Jew would agree that this is a special way of doing it. Again, I would be fascinated to hear, I'm going to try to listen to your program that you aired, because to hear, just compare notes, so to speak. But the point is, I think, I want to just say this, the single most important from my own work, I realize, people today feel they're dispensable, they're negligible. You know, we live among 8 billion people, many people, who am I compared to? It's like a grain of sand on a big beach. Birthday tells you, this is the day that God shows you and that you matter. Many people quote my book and they say, this is the day that God's decided that the world cannot exist without you. So it's really a celebration of Hashem choosing you, your indispensability, that everything you do and everything you say and everything you think matters now and forever. And that's a very powerful thing, especially in our large world where you can feel sometimes completely overshadowed and insignificant and in this depersonalized large world. I think that's the most important message of all.
It's a very powerful message, and it sounds like many of those things we should do every day, not wait till our birthday.
Correct. And remember, according to Halacha, in a way, every morning when you're saying Neshama Ba'apai, it's a rebirth. Shina is compared, Echad Meshishim of Misa. Shina is like 1/60th of death. So in a sense, when you're in the morning, it's a Chadoshim Lebkarim. It's like a renewal of your birth, right?
Quasi-birth every single day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Rabbi Jacobson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
And I hope this does justice. And I hope all those people that sent you messages will send you more messages thanking you now.
I'm sure they will now. Thank you.
Atzlacha, Rabbi, to you. We'll be in touch.
Joining us now is Rabbi Manis Friedman, the well-known shaliach, the well-known speaker. Rabbi Friedman, we actually already started airing the show, and I got an email from a shaliach in California who said he was surprised that we didn't have a Chabad chassid on to talk about birthdays. Apparently, the Rebbe made a big deal out of it. So I want to get you on, get your thoughts, and we'll edit it in, although it's a little bit late, but I'm sure we've only had a couple thousand downloads so far, so we'll have hopefully another 20 to 30,000 for people to hear it. So please let us hear. What's Chabad's view, the Rebbe's view on birthdays?
Yes, the Rebbe actually introduced the idea and promoted it, beginning with children. When the Rebbe started the children's program, the Tzivei Hashem, he made a big deal about celebrating birthdays. And then it it continued on to adults, that a birthday is a very significant time, and it can be inspiring, and it can be used to turn over a new leaf and to start a new project. So it's a very auspicious time. And the question is, why was it not celebrated in the past?
Uh-huh.
Why would a birthday be a chiddush? I mean, it's the day you were born, and what could be more? So we celebrate yahrzeits, that we make a big deal about. And a birthday not? That sounds a little unusual, no?
Hayom haras halom. I do want to tell the oilam that you're sitting at an airport and you were very amenable to doing it despite being ready to go on a plane. So that's why there's going to be a little bit of noise in the background. So
yeah.
That increases our appreciation to you as we hear the background announcements. So how would the Rebbe say that the day should be celebrated? Obviously, but based on what you said, it wasn't a day just a party, but a day of also of introspection and thought. So how would you recommend celebrating the day?
There was during Nixon's presidency, he called the Rebbe's office on the Rebbe's birthday, and he wanted to wish the Rebbe a happy birthday. So he called the office, to make sure that it was okay. And the Rebbe said, tell him that it's a day of introspection, not a time for communication, and he'll understand. It was, the office was a little nervous to say that to the president. But of course they did, and the president was very impressed.
And did he take the call, or he said, I'm too...
No.
He didn't?
No, it's not a time. Yeah, not a time for calls for politics. But in the past, the attitude was that when a ship sets sail, you don't celebrate. You wait and see if it comes back in one piece and successful in its mission, then you have what to celebrate. But to celebrate the launching of a ship, what are you celebrating? That was the argument. So a yahrzeit, how much the person accomplished, the mission is completed. Now you celebrate, you mark the day. But when you're born, you're just launching your life and you don't know how it's going to turn out. So what are you celebrating?
Mm-hmm.
That was the thinking. That was the normal assumption, the default position. But the Rebbe, if citizen general emphasizes the fact that a Yiddish neshama comes into this world, you don't have to wait to see what's going to happen for it to be an auspicious or meaningful event. Another Jew is born into the world, it's something to celebrate. Because better or worse, it's a wonderful thing.
And so how do Chabad, the Shlichim and their children, and how do Hasidim of Chabad celebrate nowadays their birthdays?
So the celebration is you get together with some friends, you announce a good resolution, and then you spend a little time by yourself. You have an aliyah on the Shabbos before your birthday or on the day of the birthday, if it's a Monday or Thursday. You give a little extra tzedakah before Shacharis, before Mincha. And you learn something extra.
And a birthday cake?
Oh, the Rebbe told one of his secretaries. He said, today's your birthday. Mustami, you have a cake?
Yeah.
So, you could take it as a joke, but the Rebbe doesn't joke. So yes, he had a birthday cake.
Uh-huh.
And that's the shaila of whether it's kosher or not kosher. The Rebbe also made a big deal about Thanksgiving, the day of Thanksgiving. That when the nations do something proper and holy, it should be encouraged. A day of Thanksgiving is a very noble thing, a very correct thing. And maybe there should be more than one day a year, but it's certainly a good thing and it should be encouraged.
Right.
Celebrating a birthday is a good thing.
Right. Right. Terrific. How do you celebrate your birthday?
That's exactly how. Make a resolution. This year is going to be an improved year, and you share the resolution with some of your friends. So it's not just in your mind. And you give some extra tzedakah, you learn a little extra something, you launch a good year. And any opportunity to inspire improvement should not be wasted.
Right. Make it meaningful. I think everyone should incorporate that into their birthdays.
Yeah. Did anybody mention something about blowing out candles?
We'd love to hear what you have to say on that.
In general, we're careful not to ever blow out a candle. Not the Havdalah candle, not the Hanukkah candle. If you have to put out a candle, you put it out by suffocating it, by touching it, you don't blow it out. Because in some way, the candle represents the neshama, and the neshama you don't blow out. So in general, we're careful not to blow out candles.
And birthday cakes would be no different.
No, certainly not. And then, the idea of making a wish, I think that's a corruption of the original idea. The original idea is make a resolution. And then it became make a wish because people were not religious enough to handle resolution. So it became a little silly. But the blowing out of the candle is not a Jewish thing. And making a wish is certainly not a Jewish thing, unless it's a bracha.
Right, right.
Your birthday, yeah.
Making a wish is asking, give me something, as opposed to a commitment is let me give something to somebody else. Right. Let me give to others.
And on your birthday, you have an extra koyach to give brachas. So let me explain the deeper part of the whole thing. When you say mazel tov, what exactly is that? Is that not a wish that you should have good mazel? And what b'chol is mazel? Ain mazel liyisrael. What are we talking about? So here's the idea. The neshama has five parts. The Gemara says it has five names. Each name is a different part of the neshama. Three parts of the neshama you experience daily. It's your seichel, it's your midos, it's your emuna. Three parts of the neshama. But there are two parts of the neshama that are not experienced daily. They're not in the system. They kind of hover above. It's like the neshama in the goof and the neshama lamayla. Lamayla doesn't mean in heaven. It means above you. And the truth is that that's why we wear a yarmulke. The yarmulke you put on top of your head, it represents the two parts of the neshama that you don't regularly experience. Only in moments of great inspiration, you get a little trickle down from that higher part of your neshama. Like, a moment of tshuva on Yom Kippur, a moment of great simcha on Simchat Torah, or on an anniversary. Then you get greater access to those two parts of the neshama that are not usually available. Mm. And that's why chassidim wear two makifim, a yarmulke and a hat, because there are two parts of the neshama that are above your system, above your body.
Right.
At any rate, when you say mazel tov, you mean that the two parts of the neshama that you don't usually experience should kind of trickle down and become available to you for a greater unusual inspiration. Like sometimes you get a spontaneous tshuva, suddenly you want to be better. It's coming from that part of your neshama.
Right.
So mazel comes from the word nozo. It trickles down. So sometimes you have a greater trickle down, sometimes you have less. On your birthday, your neshama, which was given on that day, is more available to you. So you have the koyach to give bracha.
Beautiful. Well, Rabbi Friedman, I want to thank you so much. We know where your plane is departing. We hope you didn't miss it on our behalf. But for us, it was well worthwhile. I hope it was for you as well.
Thank you very much.
Have a good flight. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I did. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.